Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Back in 2008, California voters approved nearly $10 billion in bonds to begin construction of a high-speed rail line linking the northern and southern portions of the state. The project was ambitious and forward-thinking. It envisioned a bullet train able to whisk passengers from L.A. to San Francisco in less than 3 hours, while slashing pollution from air travel, relieving our congested freeways, and containing sprawl. But since then, the project's been beset by litigation, crippling delays, and massive cost overruns. And earlier this year, Governor Gavin Newsom said the project, as currently conceived, would, quote, cost too much and take too long, unquote. But the story's not over. Right now, construction of a high-speed rail line between Merced and Bakersfield is underway. In fact, it's the only high-speed rail line under construction in the U.S. right now. And in this hour, we'll talk about the status of the project and the future of high-speed rail in the state. Joining me from the Capital Public Radio Studios in Sacramento is Lenny Mendoza, who's Chief Economic and Business Advisor to Governor Gavin Newsom and Chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. Welcome, Lenny.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
And we also want to hear from you, and we're going to open the phone lines in about 20 minutes. We want to hear what questions you have about the status and the future of high-speed rail in California. The number to call is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-255. And we look forward to those questions in about 20 minutes, as I said. But you can email or text us now at cityvisions@kalw.org. And you can also reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. Well, Lenny, let's start with the basics. What is going on with the project right now? What's the status of high-speed rail in California?
Thanks, Ethan. So high-speed rail construction is well underway. The way this works is that you have to have environmental clearance and an ability to put construction on the ground. And where we have that is in the Central Valley. In fact, just Labor Day weekend, we passed over 3,000 construction workers working on this project in that part of the state. There are 119 miles of construction underway in the Central Valley. There's been an investment of $3.4 billion in that construction. There are 21 active sites from Madera to Kern counties and over 300 certified small businesses working on it. And while at the same time, the construction where we have environmental clearance and the resource to do it is underway in the Central Valley, we're also committing resources to do in Northern California and in Southern California environmental clearances and bookend investments. So just as one example for those of you in the Bay Area, the authority has already committed over $700 million to electrify Caltrain that'll be done by 2022 and invested $400 million in the Salesforce Transit Center. So there's a lot of work underway. The intent is to do this in a fiscally responsible way, building blocks where we have the resources and we have the clearance, we will build. And then as we get environmental clearances in other places, we'll have the resources to be able to give confidence that the next stage is appropriate. So right now, if you drive around along Highway 99 and look up or out, you can see a lot of construction underway. It's pretty impressive.
Now, in the authority's May project update report, which I believe was your first as chair of the High-Speed Rail Authority, you said that high-speed rail is, and I'm quoting here, at a crossroads. Can you explain what you meant by that?
What I meant was at a crossroads where it's not a theoretical conversation around building. It's about delivering on building what we said we were going to do and delivering that in within the resources that we have. So it's one thing when you're having a theoretical conversation about a big infrastructure project. This is the largest infrastructure project in the United States. And it's another thing to be able to have demonstrated action about what's being done on the ground when you have real things being put and delivered. And so the crossroads is to be able to say, this is what we are committing to do, what we have the resources to do. And as we deliver that, we'll be able to have a different conversation with the state. We'll be able to have a different conversation with our legislators. We'll be able to have a different conversation with the federal government. And in fact, we're beginning to have a very interesting set of different conversations with the private sector who are interested in these kinds of projects as well. So what we meant by at a crossroads is at a crossroads where it's going from conceptual to actually putting something in the ground.
And let's talk a little bit about the history of this project for those who haven't been following it that closely. I mentioned in the opening that in 2008, voters approved $10 billion in bonds for the system. But can you describe a little bit about what they were originally promised with that bond issue and where we are now in relation to that, you know, now over a decade-old set of plans?
Sure. The project, as originally outlined in that bond package, was to deliver high-speed rail between the Bay Area and Southern California, which is still the vision for high-speed rail. It was intended to be a project that would have a variety of funding resources to be able to accomplish it. When it started, that was going to be about 20% of the resources required to do it. And now, along the path now, we think we have something like 30% of the resources we need to do it. So it was a bond measure. It was supplemented by funds from the federal government, both in the Recovery Act during the Great Recession, and then a supplemental grant from the federal government, as well as cap-and-trade dollars from the state of California. That sum has enabled us to make the progress that we have to date. Certainly learned a lot along the way. It's much more complicated to build in the United States something like this, where you're not operating in a way where you can just say we're going to go put it here and we'll do whatever we want to do without the concerns around environmental clearance and around the right-of-way. So it takes time and effort to get those clearances. And it also just has been an environment where you learn a lot when you're doing something big and complicated. And now we feel like we're at the point where when you are building, it's a very different mindset than when you're planning.
Well, let's talk about some of the fiscal promises back in 2008. And the original estimates for construction of the system were somewhere around $33 billion. Now we're up to maybe $77 billion or more. What explains why these estimates were so off and why we've already essentially raised the initial money we needed but still are nowhere near having the full system that was promised?
You know, there are a few things that are part of what you adjust the expectations for what it's going to cost to build large infrastructure projects. One of them is the time that it takes. So if you just take the time value of money for the amount of time that it's taken to get all of the environmental and other clearances right away to be able to do this, that's a large portion of the increase. The other elements of the increase include the fact that we're in a much more expensive environment today in terms of materials and labor than we were in the original time period. And then finally, you just learn along the way of some things that if you had all of the clearances and you had all the plans done and you were laying track, it wouldn't be as complicated and large, but there was a lot of work to get from here to there.
Well, and you also mentioned a few times about environmental clearance and how much of a hurdle that's been. And certainly there's been a lot of lawsuits. Can you describe a bit about why this environmental clearance has been such a challenge? And shouldn't it have been foreseeable that this project would, you know, run into a lot of environmental review and take a lot of time to do that analysis?
Yeah, I don't want to second guess the what happened in the past. I wasn't involved at that point. Certainly knowing what we know now, we would have had a clearer sense of how long it would take and how much it would cost to do that kind of work. But it is always complicated in the United States more generally, and it's certainly complicated in California given our strict environmental laws and our ability to have people use the courts to have remediation on some of those things that you learn as you're sent, you know, crisscrossing this huge and complicated and big and beautiful state that you're going to run into some of those issues. And so I certainly, if we knew everything now that we knew then, we would do things differently. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20. We don't have that benefit, unfortunately.
Well, and I also understand that you're coming into this project, you know, a decade into it. You were just appointed earlier this year in February. And so I want to kind of talk a little bit more from the sort of present tense of, you know, of where you come into this project. And Governor Gavin Newsom, as Lieutenant Governor, expressed some skepticism about high-speed rail even back in 2014. And then in his State of the State address in February, he cast a fair amount of doubt about the system going forward. And I want to play a clip from the governor's State of the State and then get your reaction to it. But first, here's Gavin Newsom in the State of the State address in February talking about high-speed rail.
Let's level about the high-speed rail. You know, I have nothing but respect for Governor Brown and Governor Schwarzenegger's vision. I share it. And there's no doubt that our state's economy and quality of life depend on improving transportation. But let's be real. The current project, as planned, would cost too much and respectfully take too long. There's been too little oversight and not enough transparency. Right now, there simply isn't a path to get from Sacramento to San Diego, let alone from San Francisco to L.A. I wish there were.
So let me, when I hear that, it doesn't sound like someone who really is a full-throated supporter of this project. It sounds like someone who's very skeptical of what's been happening with the project to date and the viability of the project going forward. Is that a fair read? What's your reaction to what the governor said in those comments?
No, I think what he said, and if you listen to the very beginning of it, he said it very clearly, which is he shares the vision from Governor Schwarzenegger to Governor Brown that this is an extraordinarily important project for the state of California, which we can talk about if you'd like around why he thinks that. He also said we don't have the resources today to build it out at the level that we had wanted to and the path that we were on. And so what he said is, and what he asked me to help oversee, is the building blocks approach where focus on head down delivering in the center part of the state where we have the ability to put rail on the ground. Demonstrate that, show that it can work, and then we'll go back for the kind of resources we need to do the remainder of the process. But to say that we're going to take pieces of it, build a little bit here, build a little bit there, that's just not viable. And so what he was talking about was focusing and sequencing. And that's what we're doing. And then he also said pretty clearly, which is in part why he asked me to oversee this, is as a board chair, is that this needs to be really governed transparently and clearly. If we're going to have voters, legislators, the federal government, private sector prepared to invest in the next stage of something, they need to have confidence that it's being delivered and being managed well. And so what he asked for was much more transparency, which we are. We're putting change orders up on the web. We're having all of the detailed finance and audit committee reports, which I just got the material for next week's board meeting, and it's about an inch and a half thick of data. That's all publicly available, and we want to have that kind of rigorous oversight to make sure that public dollars are spent well. And then finally, we have done a pretty important reorientation to try and bring much more of the activity of overseeing this in-house as opposed to relying on outsiders to oversee outsiders. In the early days when there were no high-speed rail projects underway in the United States, you couldn't do that from scratch. You needed to hire people who had done work in other parts of the world to get it up and get it planned. But once now we're building it, we have the capacity and are hiring people to in-house oversee it to make sure that we're getting the kind of value we want from our contractors and consultants.
And I think some of the transparency measures you're describing and the in-house work, I think, is probably welcome to some of the critics of the project to date. But, at the same time, critics definitely really pounced on the governor's state of the state remarks. And in particular, the Trump administration essentially, right after that, used that as a reason to cancel about $1 billion in funding that was originally allocated to the project back in 2009 under the stimulus bill. What do you make of what the Trump administration is trying to do? And does the governor deserve some of the blame for opening that door to those funds being canceled?
So they didn't cancel it. They threatened to take it back. It's in litigation now, and we will prevail. That's unprecedented and a legal change of an existing contract. And frankly, it's a political back and forth. It really had nothing to do with the ongoing terrific relationship that the state has had with the Federal Railroad Authority, an ongoing over a decade collaboration along the way to say, here's what's working, here's what we need to shift, here's what's coming. And all of that was very much going great. And then we had the president decide single-handedly that he wanted to send a political statement for nothing related to high-speed rail for other issues around that. And so, I tend not to look at what happens during the course of a day or a month by reacting to tweets from the president and those kinds of actions. We're focused on keeping our head down and delivering.
And, this has been one of the challenges with this project is trying to get federal dollars for it. And in other contexts, you might have the federal government match 50% of state and local funds for, say, urban rail transit. And certainly with highways, the federal government might pay 90 to 100% of the tab. In this case, the federal government has only allocated that original $3.5 billion from the stimulus that we've referenced. Why has it been so difficult to get federal dollars? And is there any hope of that changing for Californians to get some of their tax dollars back that goes to transportation to be spent back home on a project that state taxpayers are otherwise paying for?
That's a great point, Ethan. We have been under-investing as a country in infrastructure for a very long time. It's true in large part because of the federal government's under-investing. The state has been investing and substantially increasing its investment. And every time a major investment project has been well explained and put in front of local voters are passing them. The federal government is it's a bipartisan supported issue that we need to have more infrastructure investment. It's one of the few things that if you go to a congressional committee, you'll have the Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO sitting on the same stage saying we need to do this. It needs to be a scale of investment that is the type of things that were proposed in the last cycle here. And, you know, we just haven't gotten the political will to be able to do that. It's not unlike other issues in Washington. It's hard to get things moving. You know, eventually that will change when you have an enormous underinvestment, a bipartisan support, a very attractive economic return for that investment, and in fact, a point in the economic cycle sometime here in the future where we will need public sector infrastructure investment to support the economy, I think it will come again, and it will come hopefully for a wide range of projects. And we think that high-speed rail, especially as we deliver it in California, will be something that not only should be supported in California, but ought to be part of a broader view about the future of transit in the country. We need to have a kind of backbone that high-speed rail will provide in California, connecting to other elements of a rail system to actually have the ability to move the millions of people that need to move in the state of California in a way that's efficient, that is timely, that is much less environmentally sensitive, and really works for the future of how people are going to get around where they live and work and play. So, you know, we are confident that in the future, I'm not going to give you a specific date, but that we will have federal government back being partners with us again. And we have great conversations and relationships with the Railroad Authority today, even as we speak. And we've got great relationships with our congressional delegation to say that somewhere, hopefully sooner rather than later, there'll be a larger federal investment in infrastructure more broadly.
Well, on that point, we did just have a big election in 2018. Democrats retook the House of Representatives, and you have, you know, Nancy Pelosi, local representative now, as Speaker of the House. Does that change the dynamics going forward? Is there the prospects that Democrats, since they at least control one half of Congress and the purse strings, can use that as leverage to start funding high-speed rail again?
You know, anything that's going to get passed in Washington has to have, obviously, the support of the House, the Senate, and the signature of the president. So I'm not going to predict anything in the next while here that's going to happen, and given the challenges of the dynamics there. But certainly having the Speaker of the House be a big supporter of high-speed rail, and the entire congressional delegation, the vast bulk of them in California, support of this absolutely helps. It's also obviously an important topic and supported by our two senators. This stuff takes some time to work its way through the complications of Congress, but we're certainly laying the groundwork for it.
Well, and in terms of funding, you've mentioned that there's always the hope of private sector dollars coming in. And this project was originally sold as something that was going to be public-private, that the state government would issue bonds and put down some money, but then some private operator or investor was going to swoop in and start funding it. And we've heard a lot of promises from the Rail Authority over the years that there's so much private interest in this project, it's going to materialize. Where are we on that? What is it going to take to get private dollars off of the sidelines for this project? Is it even feasible at this point?
Yes, it is feasible. What it takes is private sector investment doesn't invest in extraordinarily early stage initiatives that have to have public support to get them up and running. And so what we're trying to do is deliver, as I said, on what we can actually have the resources to do in the Central Valley, so that you can see that there'll be trains running and real revenues and passengers and excitement around it. And then we'll de-risk the other ends of it on the environmental activity and the clearances for both the Northern California and Southern California. And there will be, at that point, much more interest because you're investing in a project that has revenues and customers and has a sense of progress. We are already seeing interest in conversations from people interested in connecting into that. So, you know, you see activity in from the Brightline Virgin Rail in Las Vegas, wanting to connect into California. I think we'll be seeing more of the kinds of enthusiasm when there's something that's a real investable project, as opposed to investing in something that's really at the first stages of public good.
So do you have any sense of what the timeline might be, what year or how many years before we get to that point?
You know, if the portions of the activity at Brightline and Virgin Rail are talking about are already conversations underway right now. They're looking to be the connection that comes in from Vegas to just over the California border. So this is not a theoretical construct. They're out raising funds for it right now.
All right. Well, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and we're streaming live on the web at kalw.org. Tonight, we're talking to Lenny Mendoza, chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. Now, we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. We want to hear what you think about high-speed rail, what you think the future might be or should be for this system. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And you can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. Well, Lenny, I wanted to ask you, because you referenced that we could talk about the governor's state of the state back in February and the vision that he shares with Governor Brown and Governor Schwarzenegger, former governors here in California, and that he shares it. What exactly is the vision for the Newsom administration of high-speed rail?
It's, as he said in his speech and what I reinforced every time I talk about this, it's not different than it was before. A high-speed rail that connects the Bay Area to Southern California, eventually all the way through to San Diego, and we hope will be part of a backbone of rail that is connected to other rail systems from the ACES in San Joaquin's, Caltrain in Northern California, through to light rail in San Diego. And to do that, what his vision is, which is part as well of why he asked me to oversee this, is wants to deliver something in the center part of the state because that's where we can do it first. And in addition to being practical in terms of where the clearances are, it's the length of track where you can demonstrate the speed. That's a length to be able to get up to high-speed rail speeds, which you obviously wouldn't be able to do if you're trying to go down between San Francisco and San Jose, for example, but it will demonstrate that it can work. And it's also an extraordinarily important part of connecting the Central Valley to the rest of the state. As I said, there are 3,000 construction workers working as we speak in Central California between July of 27 and June of this year, which is the last time we have the actual numbers. Investment in high-speed rail was about 18% of the entire job growth in Central Valley economy. And in fact, it was 50% of the total job growth in Fresno County. Those are really important parts of the state that while we're talking about this vision, which is extraordinarily important, of connecting high-speed rail so you can get from San Francisco to L.A. in 3 hours, it's also extraordinarily important that this is part of connecting that vital part of the state to the remainder of the state. We cannot have a state that we've got this really robust and interesting economy happening in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles Basin and in San Diego and the center part of the state that's isolated and disconnected. So this is a big part of what the governor's talking about, which is we are going to complete that vision, but we're going to do it in building blocks. And in the meantime, we're going to have some high-quality investment and job growth in this important part of Central California.
So I have heard this before, that this is the benefit of this project is that it will connect, you know, a relatively impoverished part of our state of the Central Valley with the coast and the thriving coastal economies in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And it certainly makes a lot of sense that you'd have a public infrastructure project that could direct those resources there. But it also seems like that means that we're going to be sacrificing some of the economic viability of the project, at least up front, that if you had a faster route down I-5, say, that would connect the major population centers, as opposed to trying for, you know, economic investment reasons to connect a Fresno or a Bakersfield, it seems like there's been a real economic cost associated with that decision, which otherwise, you know, might make sense. Is that accurate?
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, in concept, if you could just have real clearance and the whole point was only to have people going on high-speed rail from San Francisco to Los Angeles and therefore not clogging up LAX or SFO. That might be one thing, but that's not the vision of what this is. We need a high-speed path between them, but we want to connect the entire state. And the fastest growing part of the state is in the center part of the state in the Inland Empire. They need to be connected to this economic engine. And in fact, when you have the conversations in Silicon Valley and the Bay Area about high-speed rail, a lot of their enthusiasm is not about connecting to Los Angeles. It's about connecting to the Central Valley. There are 100,000 people, almost 100,000 people every day who commute over the Altamont and into the Bay Area. That is because of the robust job growth in the Bay Area and many people living in the center part of the state. We need to find a way to connect them, not so it's a one-way commute from just from the Central Valley to the Bay Area, but to have a robust connection both ways. We need more housing in the Bay Area so people are not commuting that distance. We need more jobs in the central part of the state so people can work closer to where they live. And then we need transit that connects them, and high-speed rail is an essential element of that. So I don't think it's fair to say that this would have been much faster and cheaper and better if it was just along I-5. First of all, that's just not practical. And secondly, that's not the overall vision of how we connect the great state of California to each other.
So is there a concern, though, that if you are connecting these workers with these super commutes from Tracy or from areas of Bakersfield or out over the Tehachapis into Los Angeles, that we're essentially going to be rewarding or encouraging some of the sprawl development that we're seeing over this otherwise sensitive agricultural land and open space in the Central Valley?
No, that's a great question, Ethan, and it's absolutely what we do not want to do. It's why this is connected to the governor's overall economic vision, and what we're spending a lot of time, and I'm spending a lot of time in my role outside of high-speed rail, is to focus on ensuring that we have regional economic high-quality job growth throughout the state. And we really need, as I said, more housing where the jobs are, particularly in the Bay Area, for your listeners. And we need much more robust job growth in the Central Valley. And the sequencing and phasing of this project can allow real effort, determined effort, to do both the near-term job growth that we're already seeing in the Central Valley. As I mentioned, this project alone is helping with that, but also to create more economic development and growth in those parts of the state. So it's not just a one-way commuter rail. We want to have it be connecting both ways. And one of the things that's interesting to me is that as we've talked about this more and more in Silicon Valley, in addition to their conversation about ensuring that workers can get to their jobs in the Bay Area, they're looking and saying, well, when this is done, it will be less time to get on a high-speed rail from San Jose to Fresno than it is today to drive from San Jose to San Francisco. So why don't we locate an office where all these people are working in Fresno rather than having to have them commute? That's just a waste of time and effort and hurts communities and puts extra today. It's often people sitting in their car alone. It puts extra pollution in the air. Why don't we just have those jobs closer to where the people already are when you have Fresno State, Stanislaus State, UC Merced producing thousands of high-quality graduates every year?
But how do you make sure that economic growth that you hope would happen in these places doesn't lead to more sprawl? How do you make sure that you can contain some of that growth if it does start to happen in the Central Valley?
And you have local urban planning and connection to the rail system, where a lot of the development that you want to see happening is happening close to the rail stations, because you don't want to be plowing over farmland and you don't want to be sprawling your way to this. You want to have reinvestment in downtown. And if you go to Fresno and look at where the high-speed rail station is and look at their plans for what they expect to be happening there. We're actually having the California Economic Summit. It'll be in Fresno in November, including a tour around the future of high-speed rail there. There's a lot of enthusiasm on what you can do around a station, a connected set of rail systems that allow people to have access to opportunity to get around without having to sit in their car and drive on Highway 99 for an hour and a half, and fight the tomato trucks that are doing the same thing. So I do think it's not this is part of why I'm excited about this. It's not an isolated transit project. It's connected to an economic development strategy for the state.
All right. Well, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW, San Francisco. And we're streaming live on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're talking to Lenny Mendoza, chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. And we invite you to call in with questions or comments. Want to hear what you think about high-speed rail, if you're concerned about the progress to date, if you think that the system should travel in a different route. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us on Twitter by using @CityVisionsKALW. Well, we've got a couple comments that have come in about the first leg of this system. So we know it's being under construction right now in the Central Valley. We have a comment from Robert who says that instead of the Central Valley, the first leg should have been L.A. to Las Vegas. And you referenced that there is a privately funded proposal potentially in the works on that. On our Facebook page, Ari from the East Bay says that the Merced to Bakersfield start is, quote, a bummer of a start, that L.A. to San Francisco to anywhere first would have gotten everyone much more excited about the system and wanted to see it to completion. So what are your thoughts about this first leg of it, the fact that it did start in the Central Valley, not in the major population centers of California? Was that a mistake in retrospect? And I have to say, we had your predecessor, Dan Richard, on this program about 3 years ago, and he did acknowledge that in retrospect it might have made sense to have started in the population centers. Do you share that view?
Yeah. Well, as I said, I'm not one to do revisionist history, especially when I wasn't part of it. Having said that, it is about the only place in the state where you can have a distance to meet the speed requirements to show that it can work. And in addition, it is much more straightforward to, while it's still complicated, it is easier to get right of way and environmental clearance in parts of the state that don't have thousands of neighbors sitting at every meeting who don't want that anywhere near them. So in theory, it might have been interesting and pronounced to be able to start this someplace else in the state. Practically, that's not where we are. And as where I sit today, there's no question that we're going to build out this part where we can do it and demonstrate it and have people sitting on the train seeing what's working. And at the same time, it's not like we are not investing both in high-speed rail and in other transit systems at both ends. I mean, voters have approved substantial investments in transportation in both Southern California and in the Bay Area in this time period. And it's not just for roads. It's part of connecting to the existing transit systems. As I said, the high-speed rail is electrifying Caltrans in the meantime. There's a huge investment in Union Station in Los Angeles that will help both environmentally clear a set of things and make sure that it provides regional and intercity rail service connections. And so, I don't think this is an either-or. We are building out a part of it where we can get the high-speed part of it running quickly, and we're doing the subsequent work under both high-speed rail dollars as well as voter-approved funding that comes from other sources, including SB 1029, other cap and trade dollars, SB 1. There's an enormous amount of resource that's going in all across the state to do these things. And the final thing I'd say is, you know, the answer is we need all of the above. As I said earlier, we have been underinvesting in infrastructure across the United States and across California, especially with how robust our economy is. And some of this is just playing catch up for underinvestment over time. But if you're going to do that, let's not think about just paving over the same way we did things. Let's think about what we can do going forward in a way that really captures the benefit of leading edge technology and also finds a way for us to have an opportunity, as you were talking, which we were talking about earlier, to reimagine how housing development happens. You know, what we don't want is let's just build more so that people can drive longer. We want to have people connected quickly, but we want them living closer and more rapidly able to get to where their jobs are.
Well, you described in terms of this first leg, you know, some of the practical challenges of building in, you know, outside of the Central Valley, and that it would make sense to start there. But, you know, in an ideal world, where would it have made the most sense if you could sort of, you know, wave a wand and not worry about litigation and that sort of thing? What would be the most sort of high ridership leg of the system if we had a full build out? Where would you get the biggest bang for your buck in this state if we could put high speed rail anywhere at this point?
Oh, I heard your last clause. I was going to tell you Shanghai to Beijing might have been really rapid.
Well, in California.
Okay. I mean, having ridden the high-speed rail that actually is underway between Tokyo and Kyoto, and I also rode it recently between St. Petersburg and Moscow, these things are really impressive when they're done. And so I don't want to minimize the challenge of getting from here to there, but one of the things that gives you excitement, enthusiasm around these things is actually having been on one as opposed to talking about it on a piece of paper. I think the real ridership when this full thing is going to be built is connecting, obviously, where the large bulk of the population, the jobs are in Southern California and in Northern California, but they need to be connected to the rest of the state if we've got an integrated rail system. And so the full benefit of this, a lot of the early, after this first building block is built, is going to be trying to take those 100,000 people that are commuting over the Altamont in cars off the road and get them on trains. It doesn't have to wait just for high-speed rail development, so connecting to the San Joaquins and ACES is an important part of an integrated rail system. And the same is true in Southern California. And as we talked about, there is that private investment that there's an enormous amount of traffic that the passenger and freight that actually happens between Las Vegas and Southern California as well. And that's even before the Raiders show up there next year.
And what about a San Diego to downtown L.A. segment? I mean,
yes,
I've seen some research
that
would be the best place to put a high-speed rail system because you've got two cities that you can't fly between them, really, and it's inconvenient to drive. Is that on the table, and why hasn't that happened already?
You know, first of all, I love when you're asking questions about aren't there even more great places that we could do high-speed rail in California? The answer is yes. And the answer is when we have the resources to do them and there's enthusiasm from citizens in the legislature in California to say let's build those next stages and there's federal government and private sector support to say that that's a great investment because we've already got the backbone built and that incremental investment will have high passenger yield, I think that's great. And the answer is all of the above. We need an integrated rail system in the state of California that can whisk the 50 million people where they need to go in a way that's both for commute patterns but also for to remove some of the traffic off the airports. I mean, as you said, it is not easy to get to some places in either by plane, and it's time-consuming and damaging for the environment to be sitting in a car to do that. So the more we have rail connecting all these places and people can understand you can get there quickly, relatively inexpensively, a beautiful, smooth ride, I think we'll have great ridership in a bunch of different places across the state, and I can't wait.
Well, I want to ask about the current segment under construction. So it's Merced to Bakersfield, and there are plans to extend the ACE line or the Amtrak line out to Merced. Do you envision that there might be at least a sort of a temporary rail connection that high-speed rail is going to be providing with this first segment that could potentially take you all the way into the Bay Area, not on a high-speed train at least at first, but with the connections that are sort of underway right now?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. I mean, the important element of high-speed rail is that it's a backbone, and eventually it will be broadly connected across the state. But along the way, it needs to have, from a passenger standpoint, relatively seamless transition between different modes of rail so that you can get on in San Francisco and show up in Bakersfield with connecting maybe with Caltrains and then ACE or San Joaquins, and you're on. But from your standpoint, you're just getting on a train one place, have one ticket, and get off in another place. So I think that is an important part of how this is going to all have to connect. And the state's rail plans, the broader view about how this is going to work, has a very interesting view and map and vision about how that can all be connected over time. And it doesn't have to wait for the full deployment of high-speed rail to get real passenger benefit.
And I guess another way of asking this is, in the short term, before we can get high-speed trains actually up and running, is it possible that the segment that's under construction now is going to be a separate right-of-way for diesel-fueled Amtrak trains that then might connect through Merced into the Bay Area? What is a sort of, maybe not short-term, but medium-term outlook for the construction that's happening now if we can't get to a full high-speed rail system?
No, we are going to get to a full high-speed rail system. It's just sequencing, and what we're going to do in the meantime is make the best use of what's available to help minimize the time that people are sitting on in cars and in trains, and also to minimize the environmental output that comes from those modes of transportation. So, you know, it's part of why electrifying Caltrain is an important part of that step. So, we're not yet prepared to talk about the sequencing of how that will all happen. But, again, don't rest assured that the intent is to have an interconnected system that is as much as possible enabling people to get from one place in the state to another without with as little complexity as possible.
Would the system be making money if it did provide this as just a new right-of-way for Amtrak trains in the valley, if that's the sort of short-term role of this construction?
Would what make money?
Would converting this segment that's under construction now, if it's just allowing Amtrak trains to run on them, traditional diesel-fueled Amtrak trains?
No, it'll be high-speed rail running on those when they're done.
So it'll never be just a diesel-fueled Amtrak line as an interim until full high-speed rail comes?
Bonding requirements and the grant requirements require high-speed trains on those rails, and they're built for that.
Okay. Well, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW, San Francisco. We're also streaming live on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're talking about high-speed rail. What's the state of this major infrastructure project in California? It's under construction, but facing a lot of challenges. And we're talking to Lenny Mendoza, chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. He was appointed to that position earlier this year by Governor Gavin Newsom. We invite you to call in with questions or comments. We want to hear your thoughts on this topic, on this project. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, and you can post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. Well, Lenny, I wanted to ask you where the California State Legislature is on this project. We've seen rumblings and some reporting from the L.A. Times a little bit earlier this summer that members of the legislature might otherwise be supportive. Some liberal progressive members in L.A. and San Francisco are now talking about essentially trying to claw some of these high-speed rail funds for more of their local projects that might one day become high-speed rail ready. But it kind of feels like there's a raid going on, or that might happen from the legislature on these high-speed rail funds if it doesn't feel like the full system can be built out. So what is your take on where the California legislature is at this point? Is there a risk that they may try to repurpose some of these funds?
You know, I think there are many legislators who are feeling the sensitivity from their constituents that they need more investment in infrastructure of where they are. And that's true in every part of the state. It's certainly true in the Los Angeles area and in the Bay Area, where there's both bonding and investment already approved and not yet built, as well as an expectation from citizens that there needs to be more investment. And I think they're right. We do need more investment in those parts of the state. But it doesn't come at the sake of existing resources that are already committed and have substantial requirements to deliver those from the federal government, from bonds, and from grants. So what we need to do is yes and. We need absolutely to build out the high-speed rail path that we're on, to deliver what we said we were going to do, to be able to ensure that it's out there and demonstrated. And we need investment in more investment in infrastructure in Southern California and in the Bay Area. And so to me, these are not about people saying, well, we're not happy with what you're doing, we want to take your money. It's more a statement around, you know what, we need money elsewhere too.
All right. So we'll see what happens then with the legislature going forward on this project. And right now we have a call coming in. We have Greg from San Mateo. Greg, welcome to City Visions.
Hi. You know, I'm really excited about the high-speed rail, and I really kind of wish people would kind of stop thinking about San Francisco and Los Angeles as, you know, these meccas, and really think about creating new cities in California that are, you know, the modernization that we need for the, you know, next centuries. Cities that, you know, have everything that, you know, an incredible city would have, like the transportation and, you know, like these really dense populated areas where people can live and work in very, you know, short distances. And, you know, this whole conversation about, oh, you know, needing to get to San Francisco, which is just so entrenched with, you know, the politics of it all and special interests and everything else. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity here, and I think we should be looking at that.
All right. Well, Greg, thank you for that that observation. And Lenny Mendoza, do you have any thoughts in response to Greg's observation?
No, thank you for the observation. Again, I think that's an important way to think about the opportunity here. This isn't, as we were talking about earlier, about having people live in one place, get on a train, and go work in another place. There's just this real opportunity as if for people who've been in other parts of the world that have robust transit systems, is there's really interesting transit-oriented development that happens around the train stations, both residential, commercial, industrial, that allow people to have an opportunity to have a transit village where they don't have to get in their car for 2 hours to get to a job that pays $5 more an hour so that they can afford the home. So I think this is part of reimagining what California is, reimagining the way we get around, reimagining the landscape that says, you know, that we don't have to have all of our job creation on the coasts. We have this really interesting and talented group of people throughout California. Let's help create jobs where those people are and create new ways of imagining how people can live that isn't so dependent on sitting in a single passenger vehicle for 2 hours to get every day to get a lifestyle that you want.
You know, I'm struck by one aspect of Greg's comment about the modern city being more, you know, walkable and having the transit connections. But at the same time, high-speed rail is a state project, while these decisions about how cities are laid out are local decisions at this point in California. The cities control and counties control those types of decision-making. So how much can high-speed rail be a way to realize the vision that you're talking about and that Greg is alluding to when it doesn't ultimately control those local land use decisions?
You know, I think, as you well know, the connection between transit and housing are, you know, two sides of the same coin. The decisions sometimes get made in different levels of government, but what we really need is integrated thinking about all of that, where we're putting transit dollars to support the kind of housing development we want, and that we are using the kind of incentives that come from the opportunity to have transit dollars to encourage the kind of housing production that we want. So I do think the California's local rights for land use permitting makes this complicated, but you know, these are real resources from the state that can help encourage the kind of development that we're looking for. And I also think we'll end up finding when, as these things get built out, there'll actually be citizen demand for it. You know, when people are looking today and say, my only opportunity to have a higher paying job is that I have to get in my car to get to it, they're asking for more freeways to be able to get to it. It'll be a very different environment where you can say, I can get on a train, I can walk to my job. People say, you know what, I actually would like to live in that environment. I'd like to have someplace where I can walk. You know, I don't actually want to have to get in my car to go everywhere. I just think we haven't built out a California in many places that's an option for people. And if you look at some of the parts of the state, some places where that's true, it's a really attractive, vibrant, young, urban environment. I think that, you know, I think you have to think a little bit more about the way the world could be as opposed to the way that we have it today.
At the same time, we do have a history in the state of building rail transit in the different contexts in high-speed rail, but where that development didn't materialize. And instead, you see people driving to the rail stops, and you see still the auto-oriented development around a rail transit line. Is there something that high-speed rail authority or the state legislature could do to really ensure that that sort of pedestrian, transit-friendly environment materializes around the stations or connected to the stations? Or is your assumption that this will sort of happen on its own as people ride the system?
No, I don't think it'll happen on its own. It's got to be part of an integrated plan for not just high-speed rail, but transit more broadly, and also the planning for what we're doing about creating incentives to fund or not fund development, some of which is partly supported by the state in different pockets. and also about how we think about who's going to bear and how do we pay for the cost of climate change and in creating a more resilient environment for the impacts of that that are already here. So, you know, I don't think this is just something that high-speed rail can do on its own. And you're right, we haven't had a great track record historically of if it's just easier and simpler and faster to build sprawl, we seem to be able to be pretty good at that, and we need to change that. And it's going to take all of those things coming together, high-speed rail, other transit, climate policy, local land use policies, fiscal incentives, all sorts of things to have a state that is one where we can get people around without having to have that much of an auto-focused transit system.
Okay. Well, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and streaming live on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're talking about California's high-speed rail project, where it is status-wise, funding-wise, what the future may hold. And we're talking to Lenny Mendoza, chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. The number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Well, Lenny, I wanted to ask you about some alternatives to high-speed rail and air travel in particular. It's one of the benefits of the system that is talked about by the High-Speed Rail Authority is that it can be a more convenient way to travel than airplanes and potentially could be cheaper than air travel. But other critics say that air travel is actually pretty cheap and easy right now. So where do you come out on this issue? And I guess another related question to that is, where are the airlines politically on this project? Are they in favor of it, or do they worry that this is going to cannibalize their business?
No, I think in general the airline industry has been very supportive of trying to create this kind of transit system, in part because there are capacity constraints at most of the major airports in California, and their visions about where they are going to go going forward include connecting intra-California, but the real revenue growth for airports is not intra-California air transit. It's connecting California to other parts of the country, and particularly for our major airports in California connected to the rest of the world. And the more we can relieve some of that capacity constraint, not just today, but where the state is going in terms of growth of passengers, I think they're excited about trying to create that alternative. And, you know, if you look at where the major airports are, they are land or water constrained as well. So it's not like the answer is we're going to fill in the San Francisco Bay or we're going to do something very different with LAX to make this truly expansive. I think the answer is, given the expected growth and current growth, particularly in global travel, that we are going to need both. We're going to need expansion of runway activity, but have it focused on where the longer hauls are and relieve some of this pressure for the shorter hauls with high-speed rail.
All right. Well, let's go to the phone lines again. We have Ben calling in from Union City. Ben, welcome to City Visions.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Just curious if you have projected or costed out what the fare will be on the current stretch from Merced to Bakersfield that you're working on.
All right. Yeah, great question, Ben. Yeah, Lenny, any information about fares?
We don't yet. The next set of business plans that the High Speed Rail Authority will be putting out next year will talk more concretely about exactly what the assumptions are for that part of the system. So stay tuned. It will be a part of what we are communicating going forward around how does the passenger, what are the passenger assumptions, what are the revenue assumptions, what are the costs. So we will be having that in the next business plan that'll be out early next year.
All right, so Ben, stay tuned for that. And on this question of fares and affordability, right now we're seeing some low-cost bus providers going down I-5. I mean, are we spending too much money on a sort of gold-plated system that we could address the travel needs in a cheaper way? I mean, even bus-only lanes in that right-of-way, and you have electric buses that would simulate a lot of the advantages of high-speed rail system. Are there lower, cheaper, more cost-effective ways to spend this money to move people around the state?
You know, buses are better than single-passenger cars. They're particularly better if they're electric buses that are not putting diesel into the air. But they're not substitutes. They're complements. We need a transit system that has a set of connections that can work. Putting on long long-range bus transit is not really a viable alternative to a rail system. It's good complements for some components of it, and as part of the steps along the way, it's helpful, but it's not a substitute.
And I have to ask you about Hyperloop, Elon Musk's proposed technology to move people at tremendous speeds. He thinks that this is a better option than high-speed rail. He's been on the record saying that. And what are your thoughts about this more futuristic Hyperloop technology that Elon Musk is proposing and that I gather some companies are working on at this point?
You know, we'll see it when it's developed. There are all kinds of ideas that people have about different ways that people can get around, from getting on a spaceship to Mars to running on a Hyperloop. We'll see as some of these things prove to be realistic that what happens to them. But the honest answer is it's not in our plans.
And have you talked to Elon Musk's Boring Company as well? I know they have claims that they can tunnel right now between L.A. and San Francisco. They could tunnel it in a year if they could get the permits to do so. What do you make of those claims? And is there any sort of room in this project to adapt as new technologies prove themselves?
No, definitely in the next stages of the build-out, we are going to have some capacity to get through things like through or around the Altamont or through or around the Grapevine, and thinking about, as we put those out for requests for information, eventually RFPs, we certainly are interested in exploring whatever the latest available technology that can do that as quickly and cheaply as possible. But we haven't begun those conversations yet.
And, you know, we're talking about the airline industry and if they were supportive or not. What is some of the political opposition that you're seeing at this point? What are the big political challenges that you'll still need to surpass to get the project where you want it?
You know, the biggest challenge is actually delivery. What we need right now is to not have big political conversations around alternatives. We need to actually keep our heads down and deliver what we told the voters we were going to do, what we agreed to in federal grants, and deliver that. The next stage of the conversation about where we go from there will be a good and interesting conversation around priorities and sequencing and those sorts of things. But in large part, trying to stay focused on what we need to do in the near term and not get distracted by whether it's presidential tweets or some random article about someone wanting to take the money and spend it someplace else. I think the political challenges are really around confidence and sense that you really are delivering on what you said you were going to do, and that's what we're focused on.
Well, that's a perfect segue to my last question. We just have a little less than a minute here. Is what's next now on tap? What can the voters, the taxpayers look to? What are the milestones coming up for this project that we should be on the lookout for?
We will be releasing in early 2020 our updated business plan, as I mentioned, that will set forth clearer expectations and goals moving forward. We will be having an opportunity, and I would strongly encourage, if anyone ever has a chance and hasn't been in the Central Valley where some of this construction is going on today, to take a look at it. And I think what's next is that we're going to be delivering on the building blocks approach that we laid out, which is to make that segment between Merced and Bakersfield really work. We're clearing the paths to take the next stage of development to make sure that we're connected to Northern California and Southern California. And get people in butts and seats on that train whisking across the state of California in an exciting and new opportunity to see the state.
All right. And do we have a year for when this is going to be unveiled, the first segment, when people can start getting their butts in those seats?
We'll talk about that in the business plan update next year.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. That's City Visions for this evening. Our guest tonight was Lenny Mendoza, chair of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. Thanks so much, Lenny, for joining us this evening.
Thank you for inviting me.
And for a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, you can visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe, and tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Join us next week for another edition of City Visions. We hope you will join us Monday night at 7 next week. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.
Tonight.